can shake an apple off an apple tree. Shake a shake of sugar, but you'll never shake me. No siree. I'm gonna stick like glue. Stick because I'm stuck on you. I'm gonna run my fingers through you.
Hey everybody, this is B-Sal of the Vault of Horror. And welcome to the Vaultcast. This is a very special edition of the Vaultcast because, well, let me just start off by saying that I recently had the opportunity to, I don't want to say watch because that's too mild of a term, I recently had the opportunity to experience The Human Centipede 2, which is shortly to be released in theaters and on video on demand. But I was privy to a special sneak preview of this film, and, well, I'm going to reserve judgment and not really get too much into my opinions on it, as I do plan on writing a full review coming up soon. I have some strong opinions and viewpoints on this film, but I do want to say that what this is all about here tonight is that I had a chance, after my screening of the film, to speak to the director and the star of the film, the director being Tom Six, who also directed and wrote the original Human Centipede, and the star of the film, Lawrence Harvey, who plays Martin in The Human Centipede 2. So I was able to talk to these two guys about the film, and I'd like to present to you now my interview with Tom Six and Lawrence Harvey of The Human Centipede.
I'm gonna stick like glue, because I'm stuck on you. I'm gonna stick like glue, because
Hi guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, that's kind of fine, I think.
Perfect. Well, thanks for giving me some of your time today to talk about the movie. I just had a chance to see it Saturday night, so obviously I have a bunch of questions. The first thing I wanted to ask of Tom specifically, which I thought was really interesting about what you did with it, was, you know, for movies like this, for movies like the original Human Centipede, there's always people that come out of the woodwork and criticize it by saying that, well, people are going to try to, you know, it has a bad influence on people. People will try to copy this. Now, you actually went in the complete other direction, and you decided to make a sequel about that entire concept, about somebody copying your movie. Now, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Now, why did you decide to take it in that direction? Because obviously that's something that movies like Human Centipede are criticized for in the first place. So what made you decide to kind of jump right into that, and instead of, you know, your movie almost seems to support that idea?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, when I was writing part one, I had so many ideas and I couldn't put them all in one film, so I knew I needed three films to do it in. And when I was thinking about part two, I went to film festivals all over the world, and people asked me, what if some maniac out there copies your idea? And I already thought about it, but then I think this is something that really lives with the audience and in the media and stuff. That's the project for number two. So I was really confident about that. Mm-hmm. And part one, the story is really psychological, and most of it happens in your own mind.
Yes.
And part two, I really wanted to go full force. So in part one, it's like Dr. Heiser doing the surgery, and he's like medically skilled, and the Martin character is totally not. So he just uses, as you have seen, his kitchen supplies to do it. And that's much more scarier, I think, even than what Dr. Heiser did.
If I can just jump in.
Yes.
And also the way that Tom then takes the violence to kind of absurdist levels. You know, it kind of gets into this kind of run-of-wheel, kind of over-the-top kind of levels. in all this, it kind of takes the mickey out of people that think that idea actually exists. You know, and it's a very cynical use of gore and splatter. You know, that's why I really found it interesting from first time Tom told me the story.
Well, Lawrence, if I could ask you specifically, how do you prepare for a role like this? I mean...
well, the thing is, what Tom was telling me about the character in the casting, I just thought, that's me.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's a version of Martin, not the death. because, I mean, at the moment, I'm kind of... I've got all my stuff in storage and I'm staying at my parents, and you just regress to being a little child because of the way they treat you kind of thing. And because I'm a big film fan and lots of, at least kind of extreme cinemas and lots of kind of horror or Japanese pink films or pinky violence stuff. So I just kind of imagined that myself, what would happen if my mum kind of reacted the way that Martin's when she destroys his scrapbook.
Yes.
And kind of pitched my mum throwing away my DVD, and I kind of thought, oh! The mother scene was quite cathartic.
Well, you know, and I wanted to ask something else about that. You know, there's a story about Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz, when her agent called her and told her that she was getting cast in The Wizard of Oz, and she was very excited because she was read the book as a little girl, and she asked her agent, that's great, what part did you get me? And he said, the witch, you know? So I'm interested to how do you feel as an actor getting a role like this? I mean, what do you take it on a personal level? Do you know what I mean? Because George Clooney or Brad Pitt is not going to be playing this part.
No, but then again, I mean, you know, look at my profile. I'm not Brad Pitt or George Clooney, you know. For a start, I kind of wondered why when they got the right person, because I'm a character actor that's done kind of children's TV and comedy before.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of thought, okay, what's this about? And it's a lead role. It's just something that I knew I had to go for and grab. But also, because I'm a big, you know, fan of extreme cinema, it was just something that was so up my street that I had to go for it. And I understood from watching Earthfall that Bob's a kind of idiosyncratic director. And I had kind of confidence in what he would produce at the end of it because of Superfestival. So I just thought, you know, if Tom's going for it, I'm going to go for it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And on set, Tom's got this joyous kind of little boy kind of enthusiasm. So everyone in the cast just kind of goes along with that, you know.
And does that help, and this is really for both of you, but does that kind of enthusiasm help on the set? Because I mean, it really a production like this, I would say, would run the risk of getting kind of bleaker. I mean, it's a very depressing movie, you know what I mean? So how do you keep the mood light on the set? Or am I reading too much into it? Because I imagine almost it would be kind of difficult for the actors to get through at times, because it's very dark material.
Of course, when you look at it, it's a dark film, huh?
Yes.
We have so much fun, and I think the key directing films like this is that as a director, you have to be like really enthusiastic. If you ask people in a very serious way to be attached to an ass, it won't work. You have to really make your crew and especially the actors enthusiastic, and that's how you get through a film like that. But we had so much fun. We felt like little children playing with fake shit and everybody had a great time, even though the actors who were inside the set, being on their hands and knees, they really had physical pains, as you can imagine. So it was very tough for them, but they are troopers, they have huge balls, and they really pulled it off. So all compliments for the actors in these kind of films.
Well,
also,
Yes.
One thing that was interesting about actually filming it was that we all kind of got the impression, because we all had so much fun, we kind of thought it would be this kind of splatter comedy, you know. And then it was only after the kind of the treatment to make to for the black and white visuals and the treatment to the sound that when we actually saw it, it was kind of, oh my God.
What have we done? Well, I what I thought was interesting about comparing the first to this one, and you mentioned something about it briefly, Tom. When I saw the original one, I think a lot of people were going into it expecting something different. And when I reviewed the first one, I really I came out in support of it when a lot of people were ready to just tear it apart. And one of the things that one of the reasons I supported it was because it really was not what people were expecting. It was, like you said, very psychological. It was very much in your head. It was very slick. And what I thought was what was surprising to me was in making the second one, you came out and you made it exactly what everybody was afraid that the first one was going to be.
Absolutely. Because now they were expecting, they were, if I would make a psychological sequel, it wouldn't have worked. Because fans were begging or almost upset sometimes when they saw the first one.
I think so.
They didn't see the shit, they didn't see more guns, they didn't see the... So I really shoved it in the second time and I really showed everything. But it's pretty much over the top. But that's really intentional. It's like a satire almost.
Well, I noticed that with the first one too, that the people did... seem to almost be upset that it wasn't more disgusting, and I wonder what that says about people.
Nowadays people are so spoiled that we see everything on television, the internet, the most disgusting things, and people need faster roller coasters. They want to have that. People are really spoiled.
I think that this one, because it's so excessive, that the violence is so excessive, it gets the cartoonish level. But in order to stop the audience from enjoying it, and instead experience it on a kind of more serious, darker, visceral level, I think the treatment, the sound treatment, and the treatment of the image kind of help with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that part of is that why you decided to shoot it in black and white?
Yeah. That really helped the story of Dr. Heiser. And I wanted to be go to the complete opposite of that. I wanted a very dark film. It's all handheld. I wanted the dirty look. And that's why I chose to make it like black and white, because that really helped the story of Martin. Martin is not really about the centipede and the gore. It's more about Martin going through the whole process. And in color, that wouldn't have worked that well. And I think in black and white, it does.
Yes. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it almost seems like I don't want to spoil anything, but we're almost led to believe that it might not have ever even really happened. It might all be a figment of his imagination.
Well, that's one of the six different readings I've heard. Yeah.
Which,
the ending, because the ending's so ambiguous.
Yeah, and I felt watching it, you mentioned cartoonishness, like there was it's almost like a hyper-reality to things where you almost would believe it was somebody's fantasy. For example, when the psychiatrist turns up and he happens to be in the same parking lot where Martin works, you know, it's almost like his fantasy.
Yeah, it's like when dreams take out the moments of reality and incorporate them in a new, different way or a different setting. It's got that kind of feel to it.
Now, Lawrence, were you put off at all? You mentioned that you had a very different background, obviously, before this. Were you put off by the content of what you were being asked to do and what the movie was about? Was there ever a point where it concerned you?
No. I come from a small south background, so one of my friends, Franco, he didn't complain about it. He said,
So we all got involved, it's all sugar syrup and ketchup and go, you know.
And another interesting thing about Martin's character, and I was wondering why this decision was made. Now, we know that he can speak because there's references made in the movie to things that he said, and obviously he's communicating with the Hollywood agents, but we never actually hear him speak. Why is that?
My decision is, when I first wrote the script, I put a few lines in that Martin would copy the lines of Dr. Heiser to really become Dr. Heiser. But when Lawrence came in and he does such an amazing audition, but without using text, he was already so incredibly strong on camera without saying anything. I thought this is great, and I skipped all the lines, and I really let him be this silent presence all the time, and it makes him much more scarier. And I love the only sound he makes when he has the baby on his arms and when he's feeding the centipede, those ee sounds, and that gives you the shivers almost. But it's very cool that you mentioned that he does make phone calls to Hollywood agents. Yeah. You're the only one that references to that.
And also his mother talks about how he's been talking about the movie, so we know that he's able to speak. Yeah, it was interesting to me that the guy can talk, but we actually never hear him speak. Now,
But also, one of the things about not speaking was it makes it more like a kind of. I was concerned about sort of trying to find sympathy for Martin because the plot starts off, already running because he's already got one person in the back of the van.
Yes.
And he's hitting another person over the head. In the first 10 minutes, so I wanted the audience to still have that kind of sympathy. So I was thinking about like Charlie Chaplin and movies and Buster Keaton's kind of, you know, black and white silent comedy. So there's that element in the acting as well, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. I was actually thinking when watching the performance that there are elements of silent comedy in there, even though it's obviously not a funny film. There are elements of, to your performance, of silent comedy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, great, yeah.
Now, obviously, the movie is already, from what I understand, there's already talk of it being banned in certain places, and there's a backlash happening. I mean... And I'll admit, it's I'm a horror film fan, and I enjoyed the first one very much, but this is a very, very hard movie to get through. I'm not going to lie. It's very difficult, it's very dark, and it's painful to watch, and it almost stretches, and I've said this about other movies before, but it almost stretches the definition of entertainment in a way, because you sit there and you think to yourself, my God, like, you question yourself for even watching it. So how do you answer the criticisms that are already kind of flying at this movie?
When I read those critics, and especially one in Fantastic Fest that was very funny, was not positive about the film, and later I talked to him, and he said he had a very hard time with the film, and he had nightmares after we seen it and stuff. But I think at the same time, when a movie hits you so much and you are so influenced by it, then the movie must do something right for horror viewers, I think. This is just a roller coaster ride that has some big loopings and stuff, and you really get sick out of the ride. But that's where that's what it's supposed to do, I think, this film. Part one is like psychological, and now you go on a ride, and the audience knows or reads that it's going to be a pretty happy ride.
Yes.
So, I also wrote reviews that people say, I wish I could unsee it. and they say, people, please don't watch it. But that's exactly what people want to watch it. Because if it makes the reviewer ill, then I think more people even want to see it then.
Yeah, I mean, I also think there's a kind of slight kind of machismo about horror films to a certain degree.
and that, you know, it's like there's a kind of jaundiced kind of horror fan out there that kind of is like, okay, well then, come on, shock me, shock me. And I think Tom's really gone for it. I mean, one of the things we both kind of agree on, and most people involved will kind of agree on, is that entertainment isn't just making you happy or just merely sort of having a nice, spending a pleasant 2 hours. Entertainment is a whole host of different things. It engages you. It's about engaging people viscerally. It's about engaging them emotionally or intellectually. And you shouldn't just think, I'll go and see Human Centipede 2, I'll waste an hour and a half, you know, and come out feeling the same. That's not what this film's for. This film's for sort of really shaking up people, you know. It does what it says on the tin. Yeah. It is a sort of extreme horror film. And it's made by intelligent people with an interest in high art and kind of lowbrow exploitation, yeah. You know. And it's got all these things mixed together.
Yeah, it's more than the violence alone. Even more of a story, I think, than part one.
It's definitely, I mean, they both are in very different ways. They're both very skillfully made films, and that's, I think, one of the things that gets lost in the shuffle when people criticize. I mean, I will say that I did enjoy, personally, the first one better, because I tend to go in more for psychological horror than for the over-the-top exploitation. That's my own preference, but the second one, in a very different way, is also very skillfully made. So now you're planning to continue this, then?
Yeah, definitely. I always invest three films. So we're going to shoot part three in America. It's called the final sequence. And at the end, all films literally can be connected to each other. So in the end, you have 1 4.5-hour film. And the third one is going to be, again, a whole different film, a totally different angle. So it has references from one and two, and I won't spoil what happens, but hopefully it's going to be a very cool film.
Well, I don't know if you want to give any of that away, but I'm curious. In the third one, will the second one be treated as if it were just a movie, the way the first one was, or will it be reality?
Okay.
Well, I want to thank you for giving me your time. It was very interesting talking to you about this. It's a very challenging film. Like I said, you know, it's hard for me. As I get older, I think I get more squeamish and I get softer as a horror fan. Movies like this,
they're cool. Thank you so much for doing the interview.
Oh, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. And I'll let you go on to your next interview. I'm sure you guys are very, very busy today.
Okay. Thanks very much, yeah. Okay. Bye-bye, honey.
Take care. I'm gonna stick like glue. Stick because I'm stuck on you. I'm gonna run my fingers through your long black hair. And squeeze you tighter than a grizzly bear. Yes, sir, I'm gonna stick like glue. Stick because I'm stuck on you.